G'day, Don Sutherland. How are you?
G'day, Andy. How's all your listeners? I hope you're all well.
Well, Kevin was just dipping into the bin of poverty and inequality, and you went off to a symposium that was discussing the just those things in Australia.
Yes, it was the week of Anti-Poverty Week, and I was fortunate enough to be invited by the Centre for Future Work and the Carmichael Centre to go to their one-day symposium in Melbourne last week. My first observation is about Anti-Poverty Week is that I thought, well, just about every person who's unemployed and on the job seeker benefit is living in poverty. And I worked out myself that the current job seeker rate is about 1.49% of the base weekly salary. That's the base salary, which is $26,346, of the chief executives of the top 200 companies. And so that's job seeker at $393 a week, and the CEOs of the top 200 are on $26,346. Now, that does not include their bonuses and other top-ups that they get, which double their weekly rate. So that was the first comparison observation I made, and I learned a lot of things from the various speakers. It was really very quite worthwhile, and I hope the organisations, Centre for Future Work and Carmichael Centre, do it again on a regular basis.
It's interesting that you made a point that the Anti-Poverty Centre criticised the poverty industry for not prioritising the expertise of people in poverty, but you did find that it was worthwhile.
I think this is a very important. Well, the Anti-Poverty Centre are saying two things. They're very critical of what they describe as a sort of an industry of organisations that do analysis and policy work on things like the unemployment benefit and other ways in which poverty takes shape, really don't do anything. What they do doesn't lead to any serious effort to actually bring about change through a movement. And then secondly, they say that they don't do anywhere near enough consulting and involving the unemployed and other people living in poverty in working out policy and strategy. And to that effect, the Anti-Poverty Centre apparently, well, they say that they're organising an anti-poverty summit for next year. And I think that's something that we need to learn a lot more about. I think it's very encouraging. And they will have their own ideas about what a successful summit would look like. It would be worthwhile more and more people, especially union activists, learning about that and to the extent and the way in which the Anti-Poverty Centre and its other organisers want to work out how to make it a real success.
But it's interesting to look at the comparison that you started this conversation with us on, where people who are actually living below the poverty line, because that's the level of the remuneration that the government's prepared to give on the dole, the rest of the country that isn't in poverty in that sense, because there's a lot of money about for some people, they don't seem to think that the inequality is a reflection on the entire country. I mean, we came on the tram here this morning in the dark, and all along Swanston Street, there are people dossing out in front of the shops. And it seems to me that the big end of town isn't uncomfortable about this.
No, they're not uncomfortable about it, except they do get uncomfortable if it's publicly elevated, because their wealth is dependent upon upon the extent of poverty. The two go together.
Yeah.
And so they don't like it being talked about and elevated, except in a way that's very polite and which also provides the basis for the feel-good charity exercises that many of them engage in, and the pretense that, in fact, they care. So it's whenever there is any public discussion, they want it to be very polite and, above all, not linked to the rate of exploitation that they inflict on the majority of the population. And just by the by, the latest annual data on the country's economy came out yesterday. This is not the quarterly growth report, the GDP reports, but the annual one. And it contains information that you don't get in the quarterly one. More of that perhaps at a later date. But what it does tell us about is the latest data on profit and profits and exploitation. And so what we see is that there is been a slight dip in the volume of profits. This is across all corporations. And that the rate of exploitation is still exceptionally high. It dropped a little bit, but it's still well above 50% and well above the average. And so this situation with poverty is directly related, is the antithesis, if you like, of the wealth that is being expropriated because of high rates of exploitation. And at some point, resistance will build to this and get more coherent, more combined, instead of the multiplicity of separate struggles. We'll start to see a trend towards unifying struggles around common demands that would challenge the power and the profit-taking and wealth-building of the minority.
It's interesting to me that clarity is given to the, say, for example, the need for housing, or the clarity that's given to the fact that there's this gross level of exploitation and profit gouging, that the big end of town just moves the furniture, and the answer to the housing problem is to give all these developers more of the public land and destroy public housing.
Yes. There's a little sidebar to that. The financial corporations, which are a segment, if you like, of all of the corporations, their average profit over the last 12 years has been 4.2%. But in the last 2 years, it's been 10.8%.
Oh, my goodness.
0.7%. And guess what that coincides with? The dramatic increase in interest rates.
Yeah.
So the Reserve Bank itself is making its own special contribution to looking after that part of the capitalist class and the wealth that the owners of those corporations and the chief executives are able to take out of that arrangement. 10.8% in June 2023 was the increase in the total profits for financial corporations. That's way above their average. It was 5%.
That's actually staggering. So yeah. This is one of the reasons for why you are so interested in the annual wage review, aren't you? Isn't it?
Fight against poverty, that is one of the most important nodal points, the annual wage review. The other is the federal budget. So the annual wage review is, the focal point there is on the industrial wage and just how intense will the struggle be to improve the industrial wage. And then there's the federal budget, which is all about the social wage and its interaction with the industrial wage. And that was sort of discussed in a very good way as a starting point. There's a long way to go, but at the Living Standards Symposium. One of the really useful reports at that on wages came from Greg Jericho. He works at the Australia Institute these days, but he's also a regular columnist and writer for The Guardian Online. And I think he's probably, amongst the mainstream economists, he's the one who writes most credibly about living standards and wages and inflation. One of the things he pointed out was that at about 8 months ago, the value of the average wage in terms of what it could buy was the same as what it was in 2010. All right? So putting aside whatever the number is, the average wage that we get roughly these days, it has not improved relative to 2010. And that is the way in which that is the product of a mix of annual wage review decisions, enterprise bargaining, and the framework of the Fair Work Act that prevents workers from using real industrial power to get a better deal on wages. And by the way, the industrial wage is very important because if there is downward pressure on the industrial wage, and there is a dramatically poor unemployment benefit, job seeker.
Yeah, because they're tied.
The age and disability pensions are at the poverty line, as the maximum basic rate is. Then that means that people who are earning the industrial wage will be spending a portion of that to support other family members and friends who are unemployed or underemployed or on the pension, whether it's the disabled pension or the aged pension. So the struggle over the industrial wage is a critical nodal point for the majority of people.
But it's not just that. It sets the bar for everything else.
In a sense, yes, it does. It has an important interaction with the social wage, because the social wage is really important from the point of view of being able to, if you like, reproduce the producing power of those who are receiving the industrial wage.
It's funny. I've been reading Peter Corris' books lately. He's an Australian detective writer, and he set in Sydney. And one of the books was from 1986, and they're just bear with me. And they have a sequence in it where he gives this guy $5 and he goes over and buys a whiskey, a beer chaser, and a packet of cigarettes, and there's change.
Yes, Peter Corris has a knack for nailing those sort of interactions, that's for sure. The other angle that was quite interesting at the Living Standards Symposium was there was a presentation, just a purely oral presentation. There were no PowerPoint slides or anything.
Thank goodness.
And he's an ex-finance executive, an investment banker, who has switched on to the significance of climate change and is driving policy ideas and so on. He points out, and I've since seen, it's a year or two old now, some work of his. He says that the transition from fossil fuels to renewables is deflationary.
Okay.
In other words, there would be downward pressure and possibly the reversal of inflation tendencies, which may rebound next year, later in the year. The faster that the shift to renewables occurs. And I think what we're getting out of this sort of thing is a set of ideas that enable us to challenge everything that the Business Council, the Australian Industry Group, the Minerals Council are going to be doing to get Dutton and the LNP into government next year. Dutton is trying to run a line that he is a champion of middle and low-income Australians.
Oh, yeah, this is the old John Howard ruse.
Especially those who do physical work. That's who he's trying
to do. Yeah.
Now, he's had, that means he sort of comes out with moments of sort of headline criticism of the supermarket chains or an energy corporation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all bull dust, as we know. But the acid we can put on Dutton and his mouthpieces is very simple. Will you support an improvement to the living standards, not just maintenance, but an improvement to living standards through an annual wage review outcome that takes the minimum wage plus its relativities to other wages above the cost of living?
Yep.
His answer will have to be no.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Or be opposing it. And then secondly, will you support a budget that includes bringing the unemployment benefit minimum up to the pension?
Yeah, yeah. And you'll have to say no to that too.
And you'll have to say no. So there are ways in which what we are learning, and we learn in all sorts of ways, but from policy wonks, is they give us material that we can use, and we need to get combative. We need to get into, if you like, verbal judo with the enemy. Take them on.
Yeah, take them on.
So, for example, I think there should be an executive pay commission.
Yeah.
Statutory commission. And their role would be statutorily to make sure that the total income for every executive is, let's say, for argument's sake, 8 times the value of the minimum wage.
Hmm. Yep. That's right. A bit of skin in the game.
A bit of really aggressive, assertive learning from Lydia, dare I say, Lydia Thorpe.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was going to bring the conversation around to Lydia Thorpe because we've got hardly any time to go. But talk about the warrior woman, Lydia Thorpe. She put it right out there.
I thought she certainly was expressing my views, and I suspect probably a majority of people in Australia are soft through to tough.
Yeah.
Public. And so in terms of...
keep it nice, keep it nice, except it's not nice.
That was dead right. My main concern, and I think from what I've read, is that she did all the right things here. My main concern that what she was doing had a base behind it, that there was significant numbers of Aboriginal people who she had worked it out with and all that sort of thing. And I think my impression is that that's exactly what she did, and all power to her.
Yep, I agree. No, well, she is a representative of her people, and we have to leave it there, Don. Thanks very much, and I'll direct people to your blog because it's fascinating. It's a fascinating exposition on your experience at that symposium, as well as some other thoughtful things.
A very good symposium and the informal discussions. I learned some stuff about AI that was fascinating, and we haven't had time for that. Connected to some people doing some really good work in unions, and also with in other organisations, it was very positive.
Thanks very much for talking to me this morning.
All the best to everybody. Bye.
Bye.